Time Now, fueled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Gary Simpson and Ron Gray.
And here we are.
Ted Hewlett, the executive director, I think, of BC, president of BC Parents and Teachers for Life. We're all a little breathless because we've just come from a major rally in Burnaby, BC, a suburb of Vancouver, and a place where there's a lot of controversy at the moment. The Burnaby School Board is introducing a new policy which has a lot of parents upset. I would guess there was maybe a couple of hundred parents who are out there tonight with translators into a couple of different languages because it's a multi-ethnic community. And they were airing their concerns about this new policy, which is supposed to combat bullying, but it is specifically aimed at homophobia and heterosexism.
Wait a minute, Ron. Okay. We're not going to play that game. This policy has nothing to do with bullying or anything else. This is about a political agenda infiltrating, well, not even infiltrating, because it's well established within our public education system.
Alas. Yeah.
It's now expanding to take over the curriculum. I think it's safe to say that, and I know Ted will chime in here in a few minutes on this, but you know, let's be honest about this, and let's call it for what it is, and let's deal in truth for a change
bullying as an excuse.
Well, bullying isn't
all against.
All right, Ted Hewlett, and welcome everybody. First of all, hello. Now we've dedicated this whole show to what we view here at Roadkill Radio as being a very important issue. And part of the reason why we've done that is, number one, yes, we are activist radio. We believe that people should be given the true facts on issues. We believe that if we're going to be discussing issues, especially in the public education system, okay, this isn't a political debate that's happening at a town hall. This isn't a leaders debate on the CBC. This isn't a get-together in some room off to the side of a restaurant where everybody wants to have their free-for-all. No. This debate is taking place in your child's classroom. This debate is taking place in your kindergartner's classroom. This debate, and is not even a debate, because that would be suggesting there's two sides to it. Forgive me.
This is indoctrination. And have you been told about it? Well, in most cases, you probably have not been. The Burnaby parents, a few of them found out about it and began to raise some dust, and we have had them here on Roadkill Radio before, and now there is a large turnout. And a fundamental part of their complaint is that they have been trying to get access to the background information that the school board supposedly used in order to draft this policy, and the school board has stonewalled them and would not give them the answers. When they really insisted, the school board told them they would have to make a Freedom of Information inquiry. They did, and then the school board said it would cost them $1,425
to get the
information that they should have been entitled to anyway.
Wait a minute. Let me correct you on that point, Mr. Gray. The school board was not kind in offering a solution to the problem of their refusal to give the parents the information. The parents found out about the Freedom of Information provision or strategy, as it's now become, through us here at Roadkill Radio.
So, and to this date, the parents have still not been given any information. Now,
the school
board is handing out a flyer today saying, find out more about the draft policy, and gives a web page. That web page still doesn't tell you what kind of research or information is behind this policy. The policy's there, but they don't tell you why they think it's needed, except they say, well, there's a lot of bullying going on.
Now, let's take a few minutes to just talk about the scene that we just came from. Literally, we roared into the studio, people. I had to go see for myself because it's always a bit amusing to go to these events. Now, I have to say the events back 10 years ago, 14 years ago, were far more exciting when the International Socialists would come out and assault parents and, you know, shut down freedom of speech and all the rest of it. But you know what? The parents stood back then, and perhaps the International, you know, students and all the rest of it, socialists, those that are, you know, just sort of the rent-a-mob mentality, maybe they've learned not to do this because it certainly backfired on them in the past.
Before we get too deeply into this, let me tell the audience that you, too, can participate in this discussion. If you want to, you can email us at roadkillradio@live.ca. I've got the email page up on my screen here so I can read your comments. Or you can phone us. The on-air telephone line is area code 604-525-4167. That's 604-525-4167. And I think it's probably a better way to go is to email us, roadkillradio@live.ca. Okay. Ted Hewlett, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, as Carrie said, we're all a little breathless having just rushed in. Ted was with us at the meeting.
Yes. Very encouraging to see those parents speak out for their children. This
it
is
really
something
was.
We've been waiting for. Unless the parents speak out, nothing's going to change in the schools.
It really was encouraging because they've come together. They've been asking Carrie for advice on how to put some of these things together. But they have put together a very coherent statement of their concerns. They were handing that out in a booklet at the rally tonight. They had speakers and translators. They were very, very ordered and polite.
Wait, you know what? I'm sitting here smiling. They've handed out more information than the Burnaby
than the school board
has.
That's absolutely true. I must say the rent-a-mob was much more orderly tonight than they were, what was it, a week ago? 2 weeks ago? I can't remember.
Okay, yeah, you were at that last one.
I was at the last one, and they were aggressive and pushy and chanting.
I would describe these people as a group of deceived young people.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, and you know what, Ted, on that point, because I went and talked to a few of them, I want people to come on this program, seeing how, you know, the Burnaby School Trustees are refusing to. Now, that should send a message right there. So I ventured over to the camp, the hostile camp, and you're right, Ted. You know what? It almost breaks my heart to see these young people being manipulated.
Yes.
I talked to them. You know, I asked them flat out, you know, are you aware of the current code of conduct? Because I think this has been missing in a large part because the Burnaby School Trustees didn't tell people there was already a code of conduct in place that covered sexual orientation, and they were unaware of the contents. It's clear to me from discussing this case with a number of them that they are, exactly as you say, deceived. They are being used in this game. Now, of course, there were the professional agitators there as well. A Professor Newman, who refused to advise us which university she was a professor with or where she was a professor with. A research assistant that didn't want to give any more information but was identified herself as immediately a lesbian. You know, why do people do that? Why can't we have a civil conversation without knowing who you're in bed with, you know?
I was interested in the fact that she was wearing an anarchist medallion around her neck. That was an interesting touch.
Oh, was that it? I wouldn't know if I thought.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess my heart went out to her too because she was very angry. She identified as being very bullied in the school, but then when I started asking specifics, was the policy, you know, enforced? And yes, it was. And, you know, and of course, we ran out of time because we had to be here to be with you folks. But, you know, remember the exchange? Absolutely. And I'm going to call her and maybe we will have an exchange on here. We'll see if she's brave enough. But wasn't that exchange? And I think you were there for it, Ron. Most interesting when she says, I didn't choose to be this way. Nobody chooses to be this way. You know, and then I stopped her right off.
That was her first thing. Nobody chooses to be this way.
So I said, wait a minute. That's not true. Well, yes, it is. And I said, well, no, it's not. And ironically, Professor Newman was standing right there, who after her initial very domineering conduct, and of course that doesn't really work with me. You know, she actually toned down quite a bit. Actually, I liked Professor Newman. I think we could have a civil discussion, especially when I asked her, and I'm digressing here, but this is important information, people. Remember when I asked her, I said, well, give me an example of the hate, because the rhetoric started, you know, we have to stop the hate, the bullying, da-da-da-da. And I said, well, give me an example. The hate, well, give me an example. Well, and I said, well, give me a gay slur. Fag. And I said, well, yeah, but I just read Extra West, and that paper is full of gay slurs. Is that something we should stop? And then she softened, and she says, well, yes. And I said, well, good, then let's work together on that. You know, if we're going to eradicate this language, then let's do this. I could work with Professor Newman. I liked her. Now, her research assistant has some issues, and I'm hoping through working with us at Roadkill Radio, if she's willing to come on, you know, we can help her get her position out and understand it better, and maybe that will open the lines of communication a little bit more, and maybe she'll come to understand why parents object to this, because that was an interesting statement she made. I said, you have your rights, but all those parents have their rights. No, they don't. Now, is there a problem from this?
Getting
back to that exciting example of, you know, I choose to be this way. People, there's been a lot of debate in the media over comments made by BC Conservative leader John Cummins when he made an innocent factual statement that people choose to be this way. And after her, everyone's born this way, we don't make these choices, I confronted her with the truth. I tend to do that. I have a problem with that, but I like my problem. Do you like my problem?
It's not a problem for me.
Okay. Well, it was a problem for her. And she says, oh, come on. And I said, well, no, people have come out and said they choose to be this way. And Professor Newman came over with an earshot. And I said, well, Stan Persky, Gareth Kirkby, former editor of, you know, managing editor of Extra West. And this research assistant immediately turned her eyes to Professor Newman. And Professor Newman was very honest.
She knew this.
I like Professor Newman. She says, yes, Gareth has come out and said this, and, you know, sort of the blood drained from the lesbian's eyes. So, you know, this is exactly an example of what we are having to deal with from those of us that are trying to at least discuss this in a civil manner, a civil and respectful manner.
I think the contrast with the other group, the parents, I wasn't privileged to be in on that conversation that you mentioned.
It was fun, Ted.
Oh, yeah, but these parents are really on the right track, because what they're asking for is information.
Mm.
And this policy that I have right here doesn't give information. It gives slogans, and if you follow the literature long enough, you'd know that there are certain meanings behind those slogans and certain consequences which they don't spell out. They're not spelling out what would a school look like with this policy in effect. Well, you can go to a school like Lord Roberts Elementary in Vancouver, and you can see what that policy would lead to.
That's my old school. I used to go there.
I'm sorry, Ron.
I flunked grade two there.
Well,
well, lucky, probably lucky you.
You might do that again if you brought up some of your ideas in that school. But may I read something from that school? Recently, Lord Roberts celebrated Pride Week, planned by the newly formed School Pride Committee. Now, this was written some time ago, but it was on the GALBC, Gay and Lesbian Educators, website. Planned by the newly formed School Pride Committee, a group of gay and straight staff members. You can be anyone you want by the flirtations was played over the public address system. The rainbow flag was raised in the playground. Open classroom discussions took place without giggles. Wonder what those were like.
Okay.
And, just a minute, and anti-homophobia posters featuring a gay staff member and his partner were displayed.
Okay, wait a minute. This is senior high school.
Elementary school.
Oh, an elementary school.
Of course, it's
an elementary school. An elementary school is flying a rainbow flag.
Yes.
Is there a Canadian flag in the midst?
I wonder.
Well, does school, the Act, School Act require the rainbow flag now? Have we missed something?
Not yet.
Okay. So there's a rainbow flag flying over a Vancouver elementary school. Elementary students are how old?
Starting with grade one, grade five.
Oh, right, because we have all day kindergarten now. So yeah, we've got 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds.
Oh, yes.
And we have posters promoting same-sex couples in the hallways.
Well, it's called anti-homophobia. Of course, everything comes under that category.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's important that people understand the broad definition of what can fly in, including rainbow flags, under the anti-homophobia slogan. And I love your term slogan, because that's what this agenda has been made up of, slogan after slogan. So this is happening as we speak in a Vancouver school without giggling.
Without, that's what...
Well, you can imagine the discussion.
That's what Gale BC says. By the way, Gale BC has now changed its name to protect the guilty. It's now called PEN, Pride Education Network.
And I think this is what, if you can see that, people, if we go to their website, and you should go to their website because it's full of information about what they're indoctrinating your students with. Okay, so... I want to take a moment here because Ron and I discussed this before the show. What we are going to try to do when we reference documents, we're going to keep a list and we're going to post these documents on the website, on the roadkillradio.com website, so people can go and get references. I get oodles of emails after the show saying, do you have the link to this document, link to this? So I am going to try to, if I don't get too carried away with this, be very diligent and disciplined and make notes about documents that we refer to, okay?
Good. So and they can go and look, read this for themselves. It's called From Tolerance to Celebration. It's on, I'll give you the URL.
Well, you'll provide it, and we'll post it on our website. So all of you people who are trying to become informed about this and get up to speed, because what you're going to find is what we discuss here tonight and why we've dedicated the whole show to this, is that this issue is just not about what's going on at the Burnaby School District or the school board as we speak, or, you know, the elementary school that Ted referred to. The breadth of this agenda and how it has taken over the BC schools will astound you. And I will hope motivate you to take a stand and reclaim the proper role of education within this province, because it's lost at this point.
Well, and this is way beyond this province. This is all across Canada. This is all across North America.
True.
One of my friends, Michael Carl from Boston, Massachusetts, who's the executive director of Mass Resistance. It's an organization that is trying to resist the imposition of the gay agenda on their students. He has sent me articles out of newspapers there, including a report, and you've probably heard about this one, Ted, but the famous Fistgate conference that Kevin Jennings organized.
Horrible.
And in fact, we should link to that as well, because Michael Carl's news release on that has videos from the Fistgate conference, or audio tapes.
Put a warning in, it's not for children.
Yeah, well, you know what?
But it was for children.
Well, and the other part to that story is that this session was taped. And when the gay activists found out about it, they actually sued the parents who taped the porn show. Because that's what it was. It was a porn show.
It was.
I mean, when we start talking about this, does it somehow become sanitized because it's in the classroom? I don't think so.
But, you know, bring it close to home. One of the things that disturbs me is that the government is signing on to this program. Now, they put out the gay and lesbian educators, I guess was what they were originally called. I guess they were called that then, put out something called Challenging Homophobia in Schools. And that's a government-listed resource for Social Justice 12, but it can be used for other subjects. Now, the handbook features a list of famous lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered persons. And among those listed is Augustine, St. Augustine, they say, 354 to 430, English Roman Catholic bishop, religious writer. Actually, they're mixed up because there are two St. Augustines.
Two Augustines, yeah.
Yes, they have a scholarship.
They
is not
the
very good.
Yeah,
wait, they're mixed up.
Yeah. Well,
that might be
also
very
included in the list is David, who is described as an Israeli king. Interesting anachronism there. Biblical lover of Jonathan.
Oh.
How do they prove that one? The lack of evidence for the assertion regarding David may be an indication of similar carelessness, I would say, regarding the truth in the selection of many of the other names on the quite extensive list. Among those listed are William Shakespeare, Leonardo da Vinci, And Popes Benedict the Ninth, John the XII, Julius the Third, Leo the Tenth, Paul the Second, and Sixtus the Fourth. No evidence, but there it is, folks.
Well,
and
you know, actually,
if you think this program is not, if religious leaders think that this program is not interfering with religion, go on some of these. Investigate.
Ted, you know what? You reminded me of something. And Ron, you were the one that brought this to light, and it's right on exactly this point that Ted has raised. And that was in, I think, our last Roadkill Radio News. We copied some of the examples I had alluded to out of this curriculum about the assuming pseudo-identities. And they're all twisted.
Yes.
But at the end of it, and I never really considered this before because, you know, so much of this is just such nonsense, but they listed two examples of homosexuals, and then they also threw David Suzuki in there as a heterosexual. Now, I think I'm going to write to David Suzuki and ask him for a copy of the confirmation letter that he sent to Gail, you know, confirming that he was a heterosexual and only a heterosexual, and that's all he ever been is a heterosexual and all he will ever be because he's in this document.
That's true. Then.
You know, as curriculum students
are
living.
He's a token hetero.
He's a token hetero. And, you know, to David Suzuki's, well, I'm feeling your pain, David. I don't think I would ever want to be acknowledged for what my sexual practices are.
I doubt if whatever his accomplishments are, that they're really related to his sexual orientation.
Oh. Well, let's find out. We'll ask a more in-depth question.
I taught literature for quite a few years, and I never had to. I didn't find it necessary to say this was a famous heterosexual writer.
Hmm.
So what's the relevance?
Well, you know, and I think this is part of this whole problem. The gay community, and I want to be very clear, this agenda is not reflective of the entire gay community.
No.
This agenda is very specific to a bunch of militant activists who I am increasingly becoming aware of are very self-focused. This is all about them, 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 and nobody else. And I think that's part of the problem here. Now, to other members of the gay community who are friends of Roadkill Radio and like what we do, they have told us that for them to come out and speak out against this creates an ostracization within their own gay community on this. That they don't have a voice in this discussion, and if they try to chime in on it, they are shut down. Now, so we want to know that the inclusivity of parents in the District of Burnaby is not even limited to parents of faith or parents who have a common sense objection to this and a civil objection and just a normal objection, but also there's members within the gay community themselves that cannot speak up about this because they will be ostracized.
Diversity does not include them.
or me.
Oh, now that's an interesting word, diversity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Carrie, you mentioned the Gale BC or the Pride Education Network's role-playing thing. I just brought up on my screen here a document with a few of them. And these are roles that students are going to be asked to play, to assume and act out in a classroom. And here's one. An 18-year-old white, single, heterosexual female secretary who is HIV positive.
Well, just on that point, that is not even reflective of that group. That's not a good example of who is HIV positive in Canada.
Precious few. That's right. All right. Then here we have a white, male, bisexual artist, not famous yet, who has a male partner. He also has a criminal record for possession of illicit drugs. Oh, and currently he is a practicing Christian. Now, Ted, you're a practicing Christian. Does that definition include being a drug user and drug dealer or a bisexual?
Not in my set of standards. Unless it says currently, unless he's left all that behind. How is the student supposed to act this out?
Doesn't indicate that. One that I love is the male to female transgendered truck driver in a relationship with a woman. Mm. Oh, a 16-year-old high school student who is lesbian and deaf. She uses sign language to communicate and is a practicing Christian. Why?
Okay, can I just stop you there?
You may.
Ron, because we're going to post these. Well, we have posted, okay. But we'll repost these. But you know what came into my mind is the observations of the Human Rights Tribunal a chair in a little squirmish because this curriculum that is being floated under the Corn Agreement, which we're going to get into because, Ted, you are an authority on this document. But you know what this tells me is, and I want to read the observation of the tribunal chair in this particular matter dealing with this particular educational component. The chair says this in observation of this course. This course involves mature and challenging subject matter. Sexual orientation and gender identity are among the issues that may be considered within the course in relation to social justice. The course involves students examining and challenging their own beliefs. Now, when I look at the list of pseudo-identities that these grade 10 students are to assume, portray, and act out, isn't that what we're talking about here? Isn't this a deliberate exercise in changing or confusing or twisting the belief systems of children?
That's what's at work in this program.
Isn't it manipulation?
Total manipulation.
Yeah. Okay. And in fact, you know, Gail's, the title for this article, From Tolerance to Celebration, that reminds me of the graphic that was distributed at the conference
in
February of 2009, which showed a staircase. And in fact, we've distributed it. We've sent out copies to listeners to Roadkill Radio, and we'd be happy to send it out again. But it begins at the bottom with disgust, revulsion. That was it. It was revulsion and then pity and then tolerance. But then on the other side of the staircase, it marched up through affirmation and support and all the way at the top to celebration. And this was a scale of students' opinions, students' reactions to homosexuality, lesbianism, bisexuality, transgender, and queer and questioning, according to the graphic. This was the staircase up which the teachers wanted to lead the students.
Ron, I have to interject this. Do you know that poem, that bit of poetry by
Alexander Pope?
Vice is a monster of such horrid mien, as to be hated needs but to be seen. But seen too often grows so fair a face, we first endure, then pity, then embrace.
Yeah. Bang on, that's right. And that's exactly the manipulation of student attitudes that was being prescribed for the teachers at this conference. And one of the professors who did a workshop with these teachers, I sat in on that, and twice I heard this lesbian professor identify Christians with the words, the enemy. Christians are the enemy. Well, if that's what they're teaching teachers to teach in their classroom. By the way, in that session, there was also one teacher who said, well, I kind of try to just present both sides and let the kids make up their own mind. And this lesbian teacher went ballistic and said, that's not good enough.
As you've been speaking, Ron, I've just been going over the handout that was given out at the Burnaby School District tonight.
Yes.
And on the back are questions. And of course, we didn't have time when we got to the studio to kind of review these things. We kind of went right to air. But let's just go through some of these questions because I think they're very misleading. And let's give the tools to people so they know how to be critically analyzing these points, okay? Because these are not new. We've encountered these over the ages now. All right, so this is the Burnaby School District Draft Homophobia Heterosexism Policy 5.45 Frequently Asked Questions, okay? On their letterhead. Question number one. Will my child be taught in elementary school about homophobia issues? Will they be taught about sex or sexual practices? That's the question. This is the answer that the district gives. The district follows curriculum approved by the Ministry of Education at all levels, which includes representations of diverse family structures, including LGBTQ families. Age-appropriate anti-homophobia education at the elementary level does not include discussion about sex or sexual practices. Now, at that school that you were referring to, I have information that a gay activist's boyfriend came in and used the opportunity to ask his gay lover slash teacher. I'm not sure, but am I so far so correct? This is the information we have that he asked a teacher to marry him.
Okay.
In the elementary school. Now, is this not opening the door to these kinds of questions about what is the difference in relationships? How can you address these issues without not getting into the issues around sex and sexual practices?
Well, the implications are there. It's true, they may not talk about the details to very young children, but the implications are there. I mean, kids can put two and two together. If they don't do it then, they'll do it the next year or the next year after. So it's all preparing for the full celebration of this lifestyle.
All right, now let's look at this statement. The district follows curriculum approved by the Ministry of Education at all age levels. Now, that may be true. The district may follow all the approved curriculum, but teachers in this province have this little thing called professional autonomy. Mm-hmm. So everything, people, that is going into your classroom is not necessarily approved. And in the past, this was one of the problems that we had, because in the past it was a requirement of teachers to inform parents. Now imagine this. When they were teaching sensitive subject matter in their classroom, or if it came up, parents were respected enough in years gone by where they were worthy of being told what their children were being informed about.
That started to go down the drain a long time ago.
Now we have kind of a free-for-all situation depending on where the teacher is coming from. And much of this information is designed to pit parents against child. In other words, teachers use situations to say, well, your old-fashioned parents won't agree with this, but you need this information. It is a deliberate divide and conquer, and what they are conquering is the minds of your children. So when you see statements like how innocent the district is here, the district is following ministry.
Well, what strikes me is this supposed to fill people with confidence that it's approved by the Ministry of Education? It's the Ministry of Education signed the Corn Agreement, giving special privileges to two homosexual activists.
And I was going to get to that.
Good.
Because if you felt that this could instill some confidence, what I'm saying, though, and hey, this is to the credit of the Burnaby School District.
It is.
Okay. You are being honest in that one statement. Yes. Okay. We believe that you embrace only ministry-approved curriculum. All right. Now let's get to the problem with the curriculum, Mr. Hewlett, because this is something that has been kind of simmering. Well, no, it's beyond simmering now. We're almost getting up to a pretty rapid boil here. The Corn Agreement goes back give us a little bit of history here, because I think it's important that people understand how long this agenda has been playing out in our district.
Well,
here.
I'm not very good on dates. It was a number of years ago now, and the Corns, one of whom has since passed on, but the Corns threatened to take the ministry before the Human Rights Tribunal, or was it a tribunal at that point, or commission?
Commission. Commission.
Yes. And instead of dealing with it, instead of facing the music or whatever, the Ministry of Education signed this agreement. And it gives the organizations approved by these two homosexuals, and of course they have lots of company.
Homosexual activists. These guys are militant activists.
Carrie. Yes. As you say, it's not the homosexuals as such we're fighting.
No.
Not
no.
at all. It's the homosexual activists, gave these two the right to pick their so-called experts in the fields of sexual orientation. And those experts had a right to have input into the school courses. Now, every course gets revised.
But wait a minute, wait a minute. Now, Mr. Hewlett, you have been in education for over 35 years. You belong to various professional organizations and also community organizations. You are well into what goes on in education. At any time, was an group or organization that you're affiliated with invited to participate in this?
Well, you know, I had to be affiliated with the BC Teachers Association, so I wouldn't be at all surprised if they had some input, because they're pushing this sort of program. But okay. I was forced to be a member of that.
Well, but let's say you're president of BC Teachers for Life.
Parents and Teachers for Life.
Was that organization invited to as a consultant?
Well, no. When the current agreement first came in, they did have a meeting with various organizations. Now, they invited the human... The animal rights activists.
Oh.
But they didn't invite any or associations of parents who might have concerns about this program.
Okay, now, and at that point in time, I was executive director of the Citizens Research Institute, which was very involved in this issue.
Were you invited?
I wasn't invited, and I tried to get an invite even to the CORN because I applied as an intervener in the CORN agreement. So when I didn't get my personal invitation, because I'm such a reasonable, kind person that's informed on this issue, I took matters into my own hand and thought, no, I'm going to intervene in this case because I thought that there needed to be some balance to it. But the Human Rights Commission wouldn't let me go and play.
Did you tell them you were kind to animals?
Yeah. Well, you know what? That was missing. I realize
that's your
now.
Mistake.
I realize now that was the flaw in our application. That is it. Maybe I can rewrite it.
Carrie, we have an email from Belinda, and it's on this topic. Belinda says, I really doubt if the Burnaby School Board has the right information to make this policy. Here's her opinion. Parents, says Belinda, should be the first educator of kids. She believes in one man and one woman marriage. She says, I send a letter to my kid's school principal asking for him to withdraw my kids from teaching things that are against what I believe. And I asked the principal to sign on that letter, but I was advised that they were instructed by the school district not to sign, and they will update me later. But up until now, no reply from the school.
Okay, wait a minute, Belinda. What I want you to do, either tonight or tomorrow, is sit down at your computer and put into writing this exchange, and I want you to write to them and tell them that you would like their response in writing. I want to see the Burnaby School District tell you that you as a parent cannot exercise your authority in that district. Please do that for us, as I suspect that this matter will kind of escalate to involve court action. And those kinds of letters will be very important ammunition for parents in this province who are being refused their rightful place in the education of their children.
But I can see why the school board would do that, not to excuse them. But the under the CORN agreement, this teaching can come in and under the curriculum as it's written, it really gives permission to people to bring in anything they want, as long as it's on the right political wavelength. And it could just pop up at any moment. You could be teaching a mathematics lesson, and the mathematics teacher comes out with the famous mathematician who was persecuted because he was homosexual. So it isn't as though it's just one little sector of the curriculum. It is all the way through, and the curriculum is constantly being revised. And as these revisions come up, we have watched as this element of propaganda comes in.
Even more importantly, then, the Burnaby School District put that in writing. We can't excuse your child because this indoctrination, this propaganda is everywhere.
Be interesting.
Gee, I wish they would be that candid.
Maybe well, they might have to be.
Maybe they will.
All right, we're going to come back to the CORN agreement, but I want to go through these questions a little bit more thoroughly. Okay, the second question. Isn't my child too young in elementary school to be taught about homophobia issues, is the question. And the answer that the district gives is this. Students in the elementary grades will experience lessons that are part of the curriculum approved by the Ministry of Education.
Oh, sigh of relief.
Have we heard that before? Okay. That promotes tolerance and understanding of the diversity that exists in Canadian society. This includes raising awareness of inappropriate slurs that focus on race, culture, socioeconomic status, disabilities, and sexual orientation. Now, two points there, because I think this is part and parcel exactly what the parents are requiring of the board. You can't just throw out statements like that. This includes raising awareness of inappropriate slurs. Well, what does the board view as a slur? Is it going to be the term dyke? Is it going to be the term homo? Is it going to be the term faggot? And God forbid if we use that in a song. Now, the problem with that...
We'd be in dire straits if we did.
Good one. Now, the problem with all of this, and we raised this issue with the Professor Newman on the lawn of the Burnaby School District, is that these so-called slurs, faggot, dyke, homo, gay and lesbian, lesbian, all these other things, are favorite words within the broader gay community.
Well, in fact, at the demonstration we were at tonight, on the parents' side, there were a lot of signs saying things like respect parental rights, give us information. On the other side, the side supporting the school board policy, were all kinds of signs bearing these very slurs.
So go figure. So when the board in Burnaby wants to start making a list then of what they view as inappropriate slurs, I think that we'll be making progress, because then we'll have something we can talk about. And perhaps, I mean, I'm going to invite the Burnaby School Trustees right now. Join me, as I invited Professor Newman, to start making this claim to the homosexual community, the extra Wests of British Columbia, that let's just eradicate from all of our language these slurs.
Something strikes me. They have listed a number of causes of slurs, but there are some others. For example, religion, religious beliefs, red hair. Now, Carrie, you'll relate to this.
Somebody might kick me a little.
Yeah, that's right. You know about the kick a redhead.
And I have three redhead
kids. I was a redhead
kids.
At one time. I'm not, unfortunately, anymore. But
well, as long as my hair goes I'm that color, Ted, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, then you won't be kicked the same. But no, the point is, as soon as you start picking on just certain people and saying you mustn't discriminate against them, you're going to leave somebody out.
Yeah.
Why? And as a matter of fact, it looks, if you just focus on one or two groups, as though that's all you care about. Now, interestingly enough, you know they had the Pink Shirt Day. Well, the BCTF was quite offended because teachers were using this to combat bullying in general. They said, no, this is on their website, no, it's just about people who are picked on because they would say gay or GBLT plus or whatever, you know.
Well, also I noticed that this says that what they want to do is to raise awareness of inappropriate slurs, things that the kids may not have heard yet, but your teacher will tell you.
Well, do you remember All in the Family?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, well, that was supposed to be against prejudice, but there were a lot of terms that most people hadn't even heard of, but they started to be used after All in the Family used them supposedly to combat them.
Archie Bunker did a great, yes. You know, while you're on old television, I've got to say that this school board statement reminds me of Flip Wilson. You remember his character Geraldine, who used to say, "The devil made me do it." Well, what the school board is saying is, "The ministry made me do it."
I don't think they want us to identify the ministry with the devil, but I know what you mean.
Hey, if the shoe fits.
All right, well, listen, Carrie, let's carry on. I'll read the school board's questions, frequently asked questions, and you give the answers, and we'll double team this.
We can double team that.
All right. So the question, how does this policy affect my role as a parent?
In your most soothing tone, please.
All right. Mr. Gray, this policy is not intended to affect your role as a parent. Oh. As with other school district policies that address forms of discrimination, the intent of this policy is to make our schools safe places for all students. In addition, school districts have a legal responsibility to proactively respond to all forms of discrimination, harassment, and bullying that may exist in the schools.
Well, if they want to teach my kids that bullying is bad, I'm for that. That's okay.
Right.
They just don't have to raise this other stuff to do it.
Well,
if they just say bullying's bad, They can say that 14 times a day, and I won't object.
It's not very complicated, is it?
No, it's pretty simple.
Well, what I liked about those parents today was they were emphasizing they wanted protection and respect for all.
For all, yeah.
All right, and I want to address that issue, what you just talked about, because I think this gives us a perfect example of how this is not just about bullying. And I'm going back to the issues of the pink, you know, day, where schools wanted to embrace this as just for everybody. And this is out of the Tyee and involves our good friend James Chamberlain. And Dave Bears from the Tyee says this, because they wrote about the pink shirt day and they talked about the flash mobs, and kids have been embracing this because this is a good thing. Nobody should be bullied. Nobody should be hurt.
I agree.
But this is what James Chamberlain said to the members of the BCTF. BCTF Assistant Director of Professional and Social Injuries, attaching a number of Pink Shirt Day media reports and leading the list with the Tyee story in another Georgia Strait. Singling out these two articles as particularly well-framed, here is the message. Day of Pink media coverage and actions. And James Chamberlain goes on to talk about the origins. Of course, it was because a student was being given some homophobic slurs, blah, blah, blah. Then it goes on to say that this is not a genetic anti-bullying day. Please have conversations about this with your students, colleagues, and families and friends.
Exactly what I'm talking about.
Let's exclude. It's exclusionary again. Mm-hmm. Let's exclude all the other people. If you are concerned about homophobia and transphobia in schools, join the Pride Education Network, aka GAEL. Any parent, teacher, concerned citizen, or post-secondary student can join and make posts to this moderated group. So here we have James Chamberlain sending out this, complaining about the media coverage of Pink Day not being specific enough to, what did we talk about? The me attitude of some homosexual activists. Forget the other kids. Forget about the school climate. Forget that every student is deserving of protection. We must give special rights, special recognition to this one group. This is wrong.
So, according to James Chamberlain, if there were a Jewish kid in the class, you can call him a kike, and that would be all right.
They forgot to include racism, which is amazing. I know they're against racism, supposedly, although... But they forgot to conclude that.
Well, and Chamberlain says, no, this is not about generic bullying. This is about a specific kind of bullying. We're going to pick out one kind and elevate that.
We're
going to
have a lot
important
of days in the school year.
Well, the other thing, going back to the answer in question two about who shouldn't be bullied, I also note what's missing from there is children who hold a religious faith.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Let's have another question.
Okay.
Why does the district need a homophobia heterosexism policy? What about the other forms of discrimination?
Here we go.
Okay.
The district already has policies that address discrimination on grounds of race, ethnicity, and religion, such as policy 6.40.
Okay.
Multiculturalism and race relations and policy number 6.40. Yeah. Propagandist or prejudicial conduct. We are proud of our programs that support, celebrate the ethnic diversity in our community. However, the district lacks a specific policy to address homophobic bullying in Burnaby schools. Yet we know there are students in our schools who suffer harassment because of their declared or perceived sexual orientation. Not only do we believe it is right to address the situation, but as a board, we also have a legal responsibility to do so.
Wait a minute. Doesn't the Burnaby School Board already have an anti-bullying code of conduct that mentions sexual orientation as well as race, religion, origin, sex? Isn't that already in place in Burnaby?
Now, Mr. Gray, now that's a very informed question to pose, and I really shouldn't tell you this,
sweet?
Speaking on behalf of, in this situation, the district, but...
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Don't repeat that.
Wait a minute. You said yes.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I
must be honest here.
Okay.
Shall I read it for you?
I would like that. Yes, please.
The code of conduct from the Burnaby School District's own website that's in place that the students I interviewed earlier today didn't really know the content of. or the school trustees have neglected to tell the media about, says this. All members of the school community are expected to comply with the purpose and spirit of the BC Human Rights Code, including not engaging in discriminatory conduct on the basis of gender, race, color, ancestry, place of origin, religion, marital status, physical or mental disability, or sexual orientation.
So why is this? Why this new policy?
Then why the new policy?
Well, because then we would have to treat everybody equal. And there is a group of activists within our community that are demanding special rights. If I have to be honest with you, because you're putting these really hard questions to me, but we've been bullied into this. And we lack the ability and the resource and the leadership to just say no.
She's playing a role, folks, if you just turned in.
And Ms. Simpson, who bullied you into this?
Well, you know, we tried to be reasonable, and we formed this ad hoc committee, and they just kept bringing these activists. And then these students and people started telling these heart-wrenching stories, and I fear that the leverage was my good-natured willingness to help and not want anyone to hurt. And I kind of got lost in the emotion. My common sense and logic just kind of fell by the wayside because they were so angry and so hurt, and I felt that they needed healing and that maybe this would heal them, and I didn't think about all the other children in this.
I can see this developing into a drama program, but if you can step back out of that role for a minute, what strikes me is policy number, 6.45 mentions propagandist or prejudicial conduct. Now, this is what we're worried about. Propaganda.
Well, they shouldn't have been doing that to the school board. Oh, by the way, this is not in the list of frequently asked questions, but it does come up out of our last exchange. Why were only homosexual activists invited to that committee?
Well, because all the other parents were excluded. I'm looking at, you know, and stakeholders and members.
Forgive
of the
me, Ms. Simpson. That doesn't answer why. That answers how.
Yeah, but you're pushing me into a corner here. You already know I'm easily bullied, and you're just being mean now.
I'm being mean.
Now,
okay.
I would suggest that perhaps that the inclusion of the broader community in the Burnaby School District. Mm-hmm. Would have thwarted this political agenda by bringing balance and common sense to the direction that the Burnaby school trustees should be going in.
Why, it would have solved this whole problem.
Well, I think they would probably have put forward exactly what we've suggested here, that the code of conduct as it exists is a really good one.
If it were enforced. Okay.
Actually, they said it had failed. One of the parents quoted the board as saying, somebody from the board saying, this policy had failed. Well, why was it not enforced? Original policy.
Well, that's why it failed. Wouldn't it have been a wonderful idea if some mental health professionals had been included in that committee?
Wait a minute, Mr. Gray. Now you are just being far too reasonable and logical here. I agree that this issue and the emotional strategies that have been incorporated into the Burnaby School Trustees' decision are emotional, and they were generated out of the fact that there is hurt, there is pain, there are children committing suicide, and these are very serious issues. But you see, if we start addressing the issues in a factual way, in a reasonable way, and in a responsible way, like bringing in health professionals and mental health professionals, then they're going to be able to tell the trustees that the issues are not going to be solved with a policy such as this, that much of the issues relate to family background, lack of ability to express oneself, that the issues here cannot be solved, the problems here in the school. And I'll give you an example, and here you have me going on in a logical way for a change, but, you know, the school's tried for a long time to deal with societal issues. We've tried to deal with teen pregnancy, and we haven't been very good at it, if I have to be honest. Seems how I'm on an honest roll here.
Yeah.
You know, we failed. And then, you know, the school try to jump on that bandwagon, oh, you know, dealing with sexually transmitted diseases. But, you know, all the sexually transmitted disease rates in Canada are going through the roof. I don't think we really did a very good job there, if I have to be honest. Then we tried to deal with prevention of sexual abuse of children. And that was a really good feeling job that we were doing. Of course, the problem was that it didn't result in anything spectacular. Children are still sexually abused. But you know what? We felt good about what we were doing, even though the results didn't reflect a change in statistics.
But you felt good.
But we felt good. We felt good. Now we have an opportunity to feel good again. And I think, you know, we deserve that. We need this because when we look at our failures in the past, we've got to feel good about something.
Okay. You know, I understand the concern about teen suicides. Last October, there was a cover story in Newsweek magazine, which is a pretty liberal publication, and it asked the question, is the bullying epidemic a media myth? I have it here on my screen.
Wait a minute. You didn't tell me you were going to bring up facts. Did you lure me here under false pretense?
I guess if you had invited parents, they would have brought facts as well, you know.
I think bullying is an issue. I really do.
Like, bullying has always been an issue.
Yes, it is.
I got bullied when I was in school.
Yes, I know. But, you know, if you'd have a school that doesn't have good control, well, that's a bad word now, isn't it?
Oh.
But if you have a school that doesn't have good discipline, mm-hmm. you're going to increase the amount of bullying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, there's an interesting solution. Very progressive, too.
Discipline.
Yes.
Discipline.
I know it's a nasty word in some quarters.
But, you know, isn't that what the parents in Burnaby are saying? And if the issue is about making sure children are safe, which is the issue, that is the issue, shouldn't it be a policy then designed to staff and administration of the various schools for enforcement about kind, civil, respectful conduct?
Yes.
Of all children, of all the stakeholders, including the staff. Isn't that what this is about?
Should be.
Then why is this Burnaby School District creating this toxic and hostile environment? Are they deliberately creating division? And I want to, something that I didn't catch before, guys, was, when we look at the policy as it stands now, it includes religion. In the new little response, religion is not included in this.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Hmm. Isn't that interesting?
So are we being regressive in what we are doing here?
Well, I think any time that you start narrowing the application of what should be a general policy, that's got to be considered regressive. If they want to combat bullying, if they want to make schools a safe place, the best place to start, it seems to me, would be to teach all the students, to teach all people with civility and respect.
Right. Right.
Is that too general?
Makes a lot of sense.
Well, that would kind of scoop everything in, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But now they want to narrow it down and focus on one group and elevate that group. For, you know, it's that all students are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Okay, and I just want to pick up on something here concerning policy 6.45, which I've pulled up on my computer here.
Oh.
Nowhere in this policy does it talk about introducing into the schools curriculums and all kinds of other things. It just talks about conduct and the expression of that conduct. And it talks about the freedom of individuals, both to freedom of expression and the right to choice. The objectives are to preserve individual rights and freedoms for all students in the school environment, to maintain educational environments free from propagandist or prejudicial conduct. You know, there's nothing in there about bringing in curriculums, creating regulations, creating disciplinary actions, creating a list of slurs that we don't even have defined. you know, this is apples and oranges. If they want to create a broad objective policy like what they have for policy 6.45 that they're using here as their, you know, this is what we do, then let's do that.
Yeah. But, you know, there's really, if you discuss, you could go all through this policy, which I have and you have, you could go all through this policy and discuss it. But unless you realize that there's something else going on underneath, there's an elephant in the room. There's something we're not discussing. And that is that this business of bullying is being used as a tool.
Trojan horse.
To bring in another whole agenda.
Well, and that's why I raised this issue of what they're viewing as a perfect example of what they do. Well, hello, Burnaby School District. This is not what you do. This is not anywhere near as comprehensive or as invasive. Let's use the word invasive. Mm-hmm. And contrary to the purposes of the public education system and its role in the lives of families than policy 5.45.
Well, and the school board chairman, Burnaby School Board Chairman Larry Hayes, has said this would not involve any curriculum changes. And yet on the last page of the draft policy, it says learning resources, curriculum. I can pronounce a word that long. The policy talks about curriculum.
Well, you know, there's a little bit of doublespeak here. Because if you write a curriculum that's so broad that any propagandist can use it to teach the classroom almost what they want as long as it's politically correct, you can say it's not in the curriculum. But then as soon as you ask them, why are you teaching this, they'll point to this very broad principle and say, that's all I'm doing.
I'm following the policy.
Yes, you make a policy broad enough so that any propagandist can use it for his purposes. That's what's happening.
All right, let's go to the next question.
Oh, the next question. I'm sorry. Yes, the next question. Why didn't I know about this policy?
Well, the draft homophobia heterosexism policy has been in development for almost 2 years and in active development for close to a year. The policy development process has been discussed at public board meetings and covered by local media. We'll come back to that because I have to make an apology there. Once the draft policy was passed by the board as a notice of motion, it was circulated to all our educational partner groups for input. This is common practice in the district. This is common district practice on all new or revised policies as detailed in policy number 1.10, district policy and policy development. Since the board has received significant community interest in this policy, it has extended the input period till Friday, June 3rd. In addition, we have posted on our website information about the public input process and background on the policy development. The board continues to hear from delegations at its public board meetings and will continue to receive and welcome input by mail until June 3rd. To provide your input, please email us. Now, first of all, I said I had to apologize. And the board has publicly said it could have communicated better with parents. Well, yeah. You could have sent home a letter, but they didn't.
Maybe parents are not one of their partner groups.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, and it's interesting that they use partner groups because in their backgrounder, they use the term ally.
Ally.
Ally. That is who makes up the ad hoc committee. You know, staff, members, a few parents, you know, district parent advisory council members, two. And their allies. Well, you know, the parents' voice, which is the group that's leading, you know, this organizational effort that's growing every day by leaps and bounds, you know, they got a lot of representation from the community in this group, Ron. And you know what? None of them were invited. The Muslim Association wasn't asked to participate. The Christian organizations, to the best of my knowledge, weren't invited to participate. Mental health professionals don't appear. Maybe they refuse to participate, you know. But one has to question whether or not, you know, the members of the faith community and the mental health community and health communities, maybe they're not allies.
What's the opposite of ally?
I wonder if the board thinks of them as the enemy.
Well, you know, in this policy 5.45, the new one, it says resources will be chosen or updated in order to promote critical thinking and include materials that accurately reflect the range of Canada's LGBTQ plus communities. Now, nowhere in this policy, as far as I can see, is there any suggestion of consulting with any other group. Now, isn't that interesting?
Well, and you know what? I think it gets even worse, Ted, if it could get worse, because I pulled up the policy 1.10 that they refer to, and that's the district policy on policy development. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this
have a policy.
This is square one. Okay. And this policy states that statement of policy are based on beliefs, provide a public statement of the board's educational intent, and generally broad enough to allow for discretionary action. Discretionary action. Yet specific enough to provide clear direction to those responsible for implementing policy decisions. Okay, so the board first has to give clear direction. Well, okay, if they can't give clear direction about this policy to the parents, do they even have any clear direction on what they're doing here?
What's this about beliefs? Are based on beliefs? What beliefs?
Well, we're going to get to that because it gets even better. Generally speaking, good policies, and this is their own list from the Burnaby School District, number one is to provide a clear statement of intent.
I haven't seen that here.
Number two, are based on beliefs, principles, and, you're going to love this one, values.
Oh.
So I think one of the questions that would be very pertinent to pose to the Board of Trustees is a definition of their belief, the definition of what principles they're basing this on.
Absolutely.
And really important is their values.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the answer to this question about why didn't I know about this, it describes it being the policy being in development for 2 years and in active development for a year. But because there's been a lot of noise from parents, the parents are being given a month to get their comments in. But listen, here's a quote from Board Chairman Larry Hayes in an interview with News 1130. Hayes says he will do what he thinks is right. Quote, whether there are 5 people protesting or 1,000 people protesting, I just think this is the correct thing to do for our district.
But wait a minute. In violation of their own policy development policy? I mean, this is how silly this board is looking. This is beyond ridiculous. This is about... Well, this is turning out to be a great example of how not to run a school board.
We will give you every opportunity to have input before we ignore you.
well,
that's what the statement amounts to.
But wait, no. But good before point. We do that, we'll ignore our own policies. And then, well, at least, you know, parents aren't rating right up there. We'll ignore our own policies first, and then we'll ignore you.
Question, is this policy final?
Well, now you're probably not going to like this answer, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. No. This is a draft policy that is currently available for public input. The board has not made a final decision on this policy and will not do so until it has reviewed all the community input it receives up to Friday, June 3rd. Now, I thought we dealt with this in the answer previous.
After which they will do what they think is right.
Yeah, according to Chairman
Hayes. According to Chairman Larry Hayes. Is there an opportunity for the board to make changes to this policy?
Yes, the board can make changes to the policy if, having carefully considered all the diverse input received, it determines they are warranted.
If they think it's warranted. All right. Well, listen, this is a democracy, folks, and I want to remind you that every couple of years you get to elect the trustees to your school board. So people in Burnaby, pay close attention to what's going on. I, you know what? Typically, a school board election is considered really lucky if they get a 20% voter turnout. This ought to be the kind of catalyst that will catapult voters out to the ballot boxes.
You know, Mr. Gray, as diabolical as your suggestion is, I think you're right. But you know what? I want to go back to one little piece of wording in that answer I just gave you. The board can make changes to the policy if, having carefully considered all the diverse. Now, This is talking about after the fact, making changes. And so it seems, according to what the board is asserting here, that those careful considerations come after they make the policy.
We'll make a policy.
And then we'll carefully consider.
If you don't like it, we'll think about it and maybe tweak it.
Yes.
No, then we carefully consider
it. Carefully consider, I'm sorry. Well,
there's no guarantee of tweaking. They're just going to carefully consider.
I suppose within their limited range of input, they have carefully considered things already, but the range of input appears to have been pretty small. Also, I wondered what happened. What is that about input, 2 years of input and 1 year of active input? What's inactive input?
I know. What?
I don't think the word was there. Where is it?
You it's are right a teacher, aren't you?
Yeah.
You've been in development for almost 2 years.
And active development. What is inactive development?
Well, I think that's a question. If one of the Burnaby School trustees would ever accept our invitation to appear on Roadkill Radio, we would ask that, Ted Hewitt.
I think you ought to invite an English teacher.
I got a better idea. Let's offer Ted Hewitt for consultation to the Burnaby School trustees.
You mean as a sacrificial lamb?
I think you come out of there kicking.
I think so, yeah.
And maybe you wouldn't be kicking. I think maybe some kicking would be going on as far as the junk that's attached to this discussion.
Let's not give them any single targets. Except Carrie, of course.
I don't mind. Yep.
We have another email in from Helen, who quotes Burnaby School Board Larry Hayes. He said, "It was just great to see so much support from everybody in the room," said Burnaby School Board Chair Larry Hayes, who, along with fellow school trustees, has been inundated with feedback for and against the policy since it was recently released in draft form. It makes us from the board in Burnaby feel that while there may be a very vocal minority out there that are fighting against us and this policy, this community and the community in general is on our side.
Well, I didn't see a lot of support for them outside.
But you saw the vocal minority.
They were on the other side of the road.
Oh, that was...
He's got it wrong.
I think he's right. The vocal minority were the ones who were
his
side.
But is that information... I saw an interesting news item about Larry Hayes, and the article out of Extra West wasn't really that clear. It seems that there was a breakfast that was held in the gay community to combat homophobia, and there was about 400 participants. So if they're referring to Mr. Hayes' attendance there, which I'm not sure it was or not, but there's been some, convoluted reporting about that. He may be referring to the support in that room.
I thought he was talking about the meeting tonight.
Oh, no, I think that he's being pretty selective about who he listens to. That's how it looks to me.
Mm. All right, let's move forward now to what's really going on in the BC public education system. Now, we did a little bit of a timeline we worked on over the weekend to assist the Parents' Voice group. And I just want to give out their website now. You can contact this amazing group of people that have just been, the most reasonably minded, diligent, concerned parents, I think, that just reflects the good parents of British Columbia. They have a website called theparentsvoice.org, theparentsvoice.org, full of good information. They're certainly not wilting flowers, if I can use that term that we were throwing around yesterday, thanks to James Chamberlain. No, they are righteously indignant, righteously angry that their children are being used as pawns in a game they don't have any information about. Now, this is nothing new, and I want to just do a bit of a history lesson here because the three of us have been longtime activists, too long, but here we still are. And I think that gives testimony to our fierce protection of the family and our fierce protection of understanding the role of government in the lives of family here in British Columbia. And Ted, I'm going to ask for your thoughts on this because so much of what I see going on here is government overstepping its authority into the lives of British Columbians. And we don't just limit it to the issues involving the Corn Agreement, but we also see it, for instance, in the Infants Act, the right that parents are basically non-issue in the decisions for medical and health care for their children.
Right, yes. That's an issue that BC Parents and Teachers for Life has been involved in for many years. And I think we've written to every government that's been in existence since we started about the Infants Act. And the Infants Act basically says that a health professional, a health care
provider,
thank you, can recommend an abortion to your, say, 14-year-old daughter. She can come home from school and from the abortion clinic, having had that abortion without your advice, consent, counsel, and it's all legal. On the general understanding that parents are, after all, not entirely reliable. We had a meeting with Wally Opal, and that came
out
there.
We're not reliable. Is that... Whoa.
I'm paraphrasing roughly, I know.
Well, yeah, no, but please elaborate.
There are some parents that aren't reliable, therefore we have to cut out the rights of all parents, is basically what was said.
So if one child has cancer in a classroom, we give everybody chemotherapy.
You're carrying this a bit far.
Am I, though?
Well, they're carrying it a bit far.
Yes, they are carrying it a bit far. And that, but that's, and we have knowledge. I have sworn affidavits of parents whose children did get an abortion under the Infants Act. So this is a very real situation that has gone on. We also have a document put out by it was one of the superintendents of schools concerning vaccination. Now, vaccination is becoming a very controversial subject matter, especially because they want to inject kids full of Gardasil and Hep B vaccines and all kinds of new pharmaceutical injections for your kids. And a lot of parents are going, we don't accept this. We don't want this for our kids, but parents aren't being advised. So, Ted Hewlett, your understanding of the Infants Act then, when the public health nurse visits the school, and let's say it's a group of maybe 13-year-olds, are parents notified that their children are going to be given a vaccination or even advised? Is their consent required?
I think perhaps they are notified about that. But, you know, and going to a different issue, but it's still parental rights. I was a teacher in a school, and I was an English teacher. And in our particular school, the nurse was to come in and give kids talks on basically the facts of life, at least the facts of how to avoid pregnancy. And it was decided that the English teachers would have the duty of having this nurse in there. And she must have spent maybe 5 seconds, maybe 5 minutes out of the 40 on abstinence. But the whole thing was how to avoid pregnancy. And she pulled a condom out of her purse and said, "I walk the walk." So that was the drift of her talk. And I thought that the parents should have been notified even at that level, grade 11 and 12.
Absolutely.
But they were not.
Well, I'm gonna send you some information that may be of interest, because I have in my possession a correspondence from a school official talking about the vaccination issue. And what it says is, while some parents may not consent to their child being given the vaccination, children can consent to it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that fits in with the Infants Act.
Well, sure. Well, it's developed right around the Infants Act. But what's really interesting, Ted Hewlett, when you think about this, now, you would know better than I, being, you know, obviously a witness to more students being given vaccinations, all kinds of things, and what goes on in the schools. But if a child can consent to it, shouldn't their refusal of an injection be equally valid? And I would suspect that in our schools in British Columbia, there are a heck of a lot more kids that are going, "No, don't," than, "Oh, please."
Well, I'm not really very familiar with the whole vaccination issue, but you're right. The rights of parents, the priority, it comes into play here as well. And that's, you know, doctors are not always right. Did you see the article about, or the program on CBC last night about Tamiflu?
No.
And they've now decided that the some people have decided, and I'm not sure if it's decided yet, but finally, but that the whole Tamiflu thing, which they purchased vast amounts of, and I thought were good.
Haven't we done this before? Wasn't there?
Yeah, it's now questionable.
Why am I seeing flying pigs?
whether its effects are beneficial or whether they are more harmful. And it turns out that the proper research has not been done. The research that has been done is by people paid by the company.
Oh, well, sure.
And so now they're questioning this whole thing. So vaccination doesn't mean that just because the doctors or some doctors or some medical companies say that this is beneficial, that it is. So why shouldn't parents have a voice in this?
Well, exactly. D-boy. And you know, we actually, and we'll digress here because this is on point, but just morphed into another discussion. We actually, here at Roadkill, we're responsible for at least raising the government's semi-awareness on the H1N1 vaccine, the swine flu vaccine, that the manufacturer themselves, and we gave credit to the pharmaceutical company because in their literature, they said this is experimental. The problem is the provincial government didn't advise people of that. And there were some tragic consequences to people participating in that experimental program. I also am going to mention, because I think this is very important for concerned parents that are watching this, and I'll send a copy of this to you as well, Ted. Good. We wrote to Lawrence Cannon when he was foreign affairs minister, because the UN is pushing very much this whole sex education. And one of the comments or questions we put to Lawrence Cannon was, why are we being used or allowing the public education system to be used as a convenient marketing agent for pharmaceutical companies? You know, we've got millions of dollars going into the Gardasil, which we know people have died from. There's class action lawsuits going on down in the States. We know that, the more kids that are talked about sex education are going to be on the birth control pill, which probably ups the profit margins, you know, billions of dollars to the pharmaceutical company. What is going on in our schools? And this is even more reason why parents need to know. Now, I want to raise another subject matter, because we have the undermining of parental authority, obviously, in this issue is one example within public education. We have the concrete example of the Infants Act, parents being irrelevant or unreliable and both in the Infants Act. But we also have the child and family protection issue, which we've dealt with a lot on this show, which allows the state to come into your home and remove your child if they don't like what you're doing. And I've seen cases where they didn't like somebody's boyfriend, so they removed the kids. I've seen cases where they didn't like how you were dressing your child. And now we have this Quebec court case involving school curriculum and the case involving socialization, where a judge is saying, to a homeschooling family, well, we don't like how you're socializing your kids. This whole movement of big government taking over our families should be sending alarm bells ringing across the living rooms and family rooms of Canadians. Mm-hmm. When you combine all these things, am I off base here?
Maybe people should look to what's happening in Germany, where homeschooling is illegal. And if you don't like the sex education that is going on in your school or some other aspect of education, you decide to homeschool, you could end up in prison. I think a couple of fathers anyway.
Children have been taken away. Kidnapped by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go back to education specific now. So going back in about 1997, this all kind of blew up, and some of the teachers affiliated with the BC Parents and Teachers for Life actually were the first ones that made me aware of what was going on, because in 1997, the BC Teachers Federation was putting forward a resolution with very similar language to what's being touted about here in the Burnaby School District, and issues dealing with homophobia and heterosexism. And then next thing we saw was the BCNDP government basically adopting the same resolution and including the promotion of curricular changes to ensure that all this information was spread out en masse through all the public education system. Now, at that point in time, teachers came to me and said, Carrie, you've got to help us. And I kind of was amused by it. I go, well, why? Well, because they're doing this. I said, well, this stuff's been going on for, you know, years in the public education system. No, but now they want, you know, the government resolution and the BC Teachers Federation. Our union is making this mandatory. And there was a change in the officialism, I guess. Maybe that was it. That was starting to cause concern. And at that point in time, we really saw the gay and lesbian educators come out very publicly. They came out of their classroom and started, you know, spreading the information about what they were doing and where they were going into the media.
They recruited the media to their cause.
Good term. Yeah. They did recruit the media, and the media willingly was led by the nose. They became political gay activists toadies, personal toadies.
And we've seen a lot of that in this Burnaby case. Some of the media treatment of this, of the parents in the Burnaby case has been atrocious. They have been called names. They have been called bigots. They have been ridiculed. There have been racist slurs used by the media to target the parents.
Well, what I particularly noticed was some of the comments by these supposed liberal people. Imagine themselves liberal, and they were saying, you know, you should go back to the country you came from, to new Canadians.
Yeah.
Or everybody who thinks this way should go south of the Mason-Dixie line, and basically the parents have no rights over their kids.
Was I supposed to go south? I didn't miss that one, but geez.
I think yes, we both have to go. It's nice there, except for floods and. And so
tornadoes.
Tornadoes.
Yeah. We take our chances. Hey, we might survive better down there than with the liberal media.
Well,
here.
One of those parents who is an immigrant, but now a Canadian citizen, handed me a paper that he wanted to present to the school board tonight. And he said, when the school imposes a belief on children, such as, quote, heterosexuality is not the norm, then the school has assumed a role that doesn't belong to it.
Well, and more than that, embraced a philosophy that has no basis in reality.
Right. Yeah, what are the facts?
Sorry, but, you know,
what are the facts?
Well, no, this must go to the values and beliefs that they adhere to in the development of a policy. But I think that you raised the perfect question for that perfect policy provision, Ron. Okay, if heterosexism is not the norm, or heterosexuality is not the norm, what is?
Good question.
Exactly. Well, and of course that takes us all the way back to Kinsey and his scale of sexuality, pansexuality, which he started promoting in 1948. And Dr. Judith Reisman has done a series of excellent books, among them Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences. Kinsey's research was fake. Kinsey had an agenda. Kinsey was promoting an agenda, and somebody else is promoting an agenda to this very day, and they're using our students to promote that agenda.
Well, you know, the other problem, and you've just reminded me of this, is the term sexual orientation. I'm looking forward to when the board has to respond to my letter to define exactly what is sexual orientation. Maybe they'll be able to do what the provincial government hasn't been able to do, what the courts haven't been able to do, because it's always this loosey-goosey term out there that seems to be morphed into whatever's convenient. And speaking of convenience, as we both know, and actually what we talked about last week on the program, is sexual orientation has now been defined to include
pedophilia.
So is there no end? So, you know, when this policy in Burnaby requires the respect of all sexual orientations, do we now include pedophilia in that?
Well, look at the definition. I'm sure they would deny that. But it says sexual in this policy, 5.45, there is a section called definitions. And it says sexual orientation can cover the range of human sexuality, including gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, and heterosexual orientations, but including the range.
Yeah, it's not limited to.
Yes, and that would be the plus. You wonder about the plus there.
Sexual orientation is pedophilia.
Yeah, it says the plus sign recognizes that not all people clearly identify with these terms and may prefer terms such as transsexual, queer, two-spirit, intersex. It's hard to keep up with all these terms. LGBTQ+. Okay, LGBTQ+ is meant to be an inclusive term for a very diverse group of people. Now, you could drive a coach and forth through that
well,
one.
Well, sure. Well, no. Let's talk specifically on what we know, because experts appeared before the Justice Committee in Ottawa on February 14th and advised the committee that pedophilia was a sexual orientation similar to homosexuality. That is what the experts gave it as. Experts before the Justice Committee, we've got the transcripts. I'll post the transcripts.
Okay. And may I point out that a lot of Canadian universities right now, today, there are courses being taught that refer to intergenerational sex. You and I know it as pedophilia, but they're introducing the term intergenerational sex. There is an assault on our children.
Well, and I've got some other bad news. The new guide, the DSM-VPMP for the psychologists, is now the new one that's coming out. Apparently, I've been tipped off. Now cites people who involve themselves or engage or commit rape really aren't sexual predators. They have a mental health issue. It is now going to be recognized as a mental disorder.
Well, homosexuality used to be classified as a mental health issue.
Not that long ago.
Now they've dropped it.
Well, yeah, but now, I would suggest...
And now we're being asked to celebrate it. Maybe we'll soon be asked to celebrate rape and pedophilia.
Pedophilia.
Where does this go?
Well, it's never ending.
Just at the top of the hour here, I would like to remind people that we're open to receiving their emails. You can participate in this this conversation at roadkillradio@live.ca, or you can phone us at 604-525-4167. Okay.
Sorry, people. Curiosity is getting the better of me. I want to know the Canuck score.
2-2 overtime.
2-2 overtime. I had to ask. Okay. Now, let's move forward. We were talking about in 1997 how the resolutions were passed. Now, people should know, politically speaking, the BC Teachers Federation is joined at the hip with the New Democratic Party, very left-wing.
Who are in turn joined at the hip with the International Socialists. Okay.
There's a lot of hips going on here. So what we saw then, and I was very much a part of this, was after being educated by these good teachers within the public education system about the degree of propaganda that was infiltrating the system, I decided at that point in time that the Citizens Research Institute would just, you know, put a full stop to this. And I thought it was a very practical solution. We created the Declaration of Family Rights, which has now become a good buzzword since how this whole issue has resurrected itself, and we're going to update that. And we had over 10,000 requests for that document. And the really good news is, because I want to make sure at this point, too, that parents are aware that there are a lot of really good teachers that are doing a lot of really good things in the schools.
We have a phone call.
Let me finish the thought, and then we'll get to the call. But they are ostracized if they try to speak up. And I want to come back to this, Ted, because you will have witnessed this firsthand. I know you were involved in some of the attempt to bring some reason to these discussions. But quite often, these good teachers look for allies in parents who do have the ability to speak out publicly on these issues, because a lot of these teachers will be disciplined if they address these things in public. So we'll come back to that discussion. We've got a caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah. Oop, there. We'll just turn up the volume here a bit so we can hear you. Yes. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
Am I on right now?
You are on the air right now.
Hi, Rod and Carrie. It's Deanna.
Oh, Deanna. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I just got back from the rally, the parents' rally in Burnaby.
Oh, good.
Yes.
We get a report.
And I must say it was very well attended. The parents were very, very upbeat. They were very encouraged to see a much larger crowd today than last week. And I got a chance to talk to quite a number of people there. As they come to know what this agenda is all about, they are in total shock. The problem has been that very many parents haven't really, we are so busy being compassionate to people that many people are not aware of what we are being compassionate about. And when one of the organizers read out some of the contents of that draft policy, the parents were in shock. There were parents who came up and spoke about their own personal experiences in various schools throughout the Lower Mainland, how they were being ignored when they had concerns. They were being ignored by their school principals. We even had one of the organizers speaking about the media, how biased they have been, and how the reporting has been skewed and less than honest. So there's all of this going on, but I must say I came away with a very good feeling that the parents are feeling very encouraged. They are very upbeat, and they really want to keep pursuing the issue. They feel their children are well worth it.
It was encouraging to see those parents, yes.
You know, I, as somebody who's been involved with this issue for too long, but, you know, and maybe that will be the good thing for Kerry Simpson this time. I am so fed up with it. I am going to just do this thing in this time. Is that a good way to be at this point?
Well, I think it's really important for Deanna and the Burnaby parents, Ted, you and me, all of us to recognize that this is not the only battle in this war. This is going to go on. I am grateful to these Burnaby parents because I think they have kicked off what may be a nationwide tidal wave of parental resentment against being ignored and having our children intellectually kidnapped and morally raped.
Good one.
Wow.
Because that's what we're dealing with.
It is. It is. And we, this is the time for us to stand up in this struggle. You know, I thought way back when we were trying to fight the fight on the abortion issue, and we have not given up on that one. We'll keep fighting that. I thought that the humanity of the preborn child was so self-evident that everyone would rise up. But they didn't. Mm-hmm. Then when this assault on our children in schools came up, I thought that parents would look across the breakfast table at the children they could see, and they would at least defend them. But that hasn't happened either, because there are too many parents who are using the public school system as a tax-funded babysitter so that they can go out to work and put a second BMW in the driveway, and it's revolting. It is now time for parents to get on to this issue and stand up and fight for their children.
Yeah, some of the parents who are anything but revolting are revolting. We're glad to see them revolting. Yeah.
Well, you know what? And I want to defend some of the parents because they've been conditioned that that's what you're supposed to do, Ron. Yes. Gullible, all those other things, but there has been a societal conditioning, and my generation is part of that. I mean, I was, you know, happy being a commercial pilot, and when I got pregnant, you know, I was going to be home with that baby for 2 months maybe, and then get the nanny, because that's what we were told we were supposed to do, because this, you know, my generation, and it's even getting worse, we're never told that children need a parent. Children need a mom. Those formative years are essential to the well-being of a child. We have lied to generation after generation after generation. So in defense of that, of those parents, yes, there has been a conditioning, but to take away their defense, when that baby got into my arms, like hell anybody was going to take it out of my arms, okay?
Your maternal instincts kicked in.
Well, there's another factor here, and that is an over-reliance on authority. Look at the way they quote the BC Ministry of Education all the time.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
we need experts, but, you know, a lot of experts just make bigger mistakes than the rest of us. They certainly have more power, too, if they're in authority.
Bravo. Well, and they make money at it, too, Ted Hewitt.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
The other problem.
That's
Deanna, true. Were you able to go into the board meeting tonight?
No, I was outside with the parents, you know, and the news reporters and all were there. But one interesting thing, Kerry, that I should mention, one of the speakers raised the issue of why the Burnaby School District had not called in experts from the health field when forming such a policy. I talked to this person later and told them, yes, this is a very, very important aspect that needs to be considered,
yes,
and I hope they will push on with it.
Good for you.
Because it's something that needs to be looked at. We need to protect our children. Schools need to be a safe place. I mean, they keep touting the safety of children. I'm sure it's in the BC School Act somewhere. This is a very important issue for parents, the safety of their children.
Well, and on that point, Deanna, the safety and well-being of those students that are hurting, aren't they worthy enough? Aren't they deserving of professional input into a policy such as this?
Absolutely.
One would think, but obviously not, because mental health professionals and health professionals weren't considered to be allies in the ad hoc committee makeup.
Well, these other people were considered allies. You know, you can come to any conclusion if you choose the right experts.
Well, I don't even think we had
your own
an expert.
Experts.
We don't
no,
have
no,
an
you
expert.
You can call them experts.
I mean, that's the ad hoc committee. There is no expertise involved in this.
Well, you imagine they...
There's one kind of expertise. They claim it. Yeah. There's one kind of expertise.
All right, Deanna, well, thanks so much for that
thanks
update
for
report.
That report.
You're very welcome, Carrie.
Are things over now at the school board? Have the parents dispersed?
Oh, yes. They have dispersed a while back.
Okay.
Did a lot of them go into the school board meeting?
They were all closing up, but they were very upbeat, and they're waiting to see now what the response of the school board is. But I think there's a lot of strategy that is being planned. They're very encouraged, and they're really looking to you, Kerry, to keep pushing on this matter.
Yeah.
So good luck, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, gee, thanks.
Okay.
Good night,
bye-bye.
Deanna. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Deanna.
You know, I'm going to say this to this group of parents. It has been a privilege to work with them. I am so encouraged, and when we were going to get into some of the background on this, you know, I've had the privilege of speaking to, you know, 1,300 people in Nanaimo and 800 people in Terrace. I think we had the whole town out at that. But give me five people in a room who are motivated by their family and their family's rightful station in this democracy and their understanding of their role as a parent. Give me five people like that anytime, and they can have all of my time.
Yeah. I don't really care how much people know. I want to know how much they care.
Well, and I want to see how much they're willing to do with what they care and know about.
Yeah.
And, you know, this Burnaby crowd... maybe it's that little bit of a different generation again, Ron. You know, my kids are all growing up now. I've got, you know, grandchild number 7 on the way. And you know, the thing that I always found interesting is that when my kids were growing up, because they're parents now, of course, is that this generation that's now, you know, the vocal group in Burnaby, they were raised with, I have rights, damn it, you know. And, you know, this may come back to bite all those people who use that mentality, that ideology, that indoctrination, because certainly this group understands that they do have rights and they're going to exercise them.
Well, I wish them well. I observed last week and this week again that the number of people who are allowed to come into the meeting is limited.
At 40 or something?
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, I was going to ask how many.
Amount,
yeah, I was going to ask Deanna how many, if she knew how many had gone in, because this
you had to be on the list.
This board member apparently just saw the people on the other side as the majority.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting too, Ted, is when we arrived at the rally just before the show, they were calling for 15 people. So I guess the board only allowed a certain number of the parents who were opposed to this. You know, the very interesting situation, but put it this way, the ability for parents to go in contrary, because, you know, public input and what was some of their answers here, you know, on the public meetings and all the rest of it.
It is true that in the board in the school board meeting room, there's limited seating. But I would point out that the school board owns a number of properties that have big auditoriums in them. They're called schools.
Oh, well, now wait a
minute,
Ron.
And they could open one of those for one of these meetings.
What a good idea.
Well, novel concept, but obviously their ability to think outside the box or their district boardroom doesn't exist.
A little box, very small box.
Okay. So good news, and yes, going back to these parents, you know, this is a good group. And the other thing I'm going to make very public at this point, and these are the tools that we were denied going back to 97 and to early 2000 and when the Corn Agreement was all coming in, is that the internet has changed everything. The ability for parents to communicate, to transmit information instantaneously, is just the deal breaker on this. Before, people were reliant on the media, which we all know was totally ignorant, obviously biased, and just didn't want to know any different, right? This group of parents has the ability now to boycott CKNW, which is what they did tonight. They refused to give interviews to CKNW because of their irresponsible
bias,
unfair reporting. Yeah. And I say, good on you, parents. You spanked them. They put out a press release called Skewing the News. You know, and this is what's changed. And this is what politicians don't get. This is what those Burnaby trustees better get. And what the media, the old downstream media, as we call it, don't understand is that the tools for information and communication are into everybody's living room, and this little finger is all-powerful.
That's right. And information is no longer controlled through a narrow pipe.
Controlled or censored.
Or censored. You know, I want to read an item from this timeline. At Seacove Secondary School in North Vancouver, there was an activist invited there to speak to an auditorium full of students. Now, PFLAG, that's Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Right.
All right, this activist addressed these questions to the students.
Okay, but wait a minute. Parents knew this was going on, didn't they? No.
This is just one of many examples of things that transpire without parental knowledge.
Hmm.
So this PFLAG activist...
Wait, I have to get over my shock. Duh.
Okay, all right. Asked an auditorium full of students. You see, they got to use the auditorium.
As opposed to the Board of School Trustees. Okay.
If you've never slept with a person of the same sex, how do you know you wouldn't prefer that? Isn't it possible that all you need is a good gay lover? Then he asked, what do you think caused your heterosexuality? When and how did you first decide you were a heterosexual? Isn't it possible that heterosexuality is just a phase you're going through that you may grow out of? Well, yeah, but Bill Good on CKNW used the same kind of argument.
They're not being sarcastic. It is a designed psychological exercise to create a thought process that starts questioning.
Well, it can't be both.
It is not sarcastic.
It is designed to start.
I mean, these are impressionable kids. I mean, really, you know, think about it. When was the moment, you know, that you just determined your heterosexuality? I mean, I remember, you know, I was driving down the road and the clouds parted and I went, hallelujah, I'm straight. Just like that.
This is designed to create a sense of a false sense of moral equivalency between normal sexuality and perversion. That's exactly what it is.
And the term perversion, we argue about this often, do we not,
Carrie
Andre?
Carrie and I argue about this.
Because you come from a place where there is right and wrong. I come from a generation of anything goes.
I have an English teacher beside me who will tell you that the word perversion means the misuse of something for a purpose other than what it was intended.
Right.
Am I right?
Yes.
All right. And in our discussions, because of your logical reliance on proper English language, you are bringing me over. And you know what, people? That's what's beautiful about Roadkill Radio here. We allow each other to have differences. We actually have healthy debates on issue.
We do.
And we love each other after the fact. As a matter of fact, we can still sit down and drink wine.
Figuratively speaking.
Yeah, well, oh, as friends, we love you, right?
All right.
You see how this discussion perverts everything? There. Did I use that word?
You used that word. All right, okay. Nevertheless, I am angry about this school where this person...
Activist.
Yes,
this activist came in and... manipulated the minds of a whole auditorium full of students
with
what is going on in our schools. That's not right.
But you know what's more concerning to me, Ron Gray, is going back to the discussion that we had very close to the beginning of the show when I invited that parent to write to the Burnaby District and have them put in writing why they wouldn't do this. And what concerns me more is the facts of what Ted Hewlett presented as the reality of what is going on in our schools. You cannot opt out of this. You cannot get away from this because it's systemic. It's everywhere. It's just wormed its way into our schools and finds its presence in every subject matter that we talk about.
There is an aggressive agenda being pursued in the schools to sequester the minds of one whole generation and manipulate them into a set of beliefs that are antithetical to those on which this nation was established.
Whoa. But you know what, more importantly, Ron, and well, or in just consistent with what you're talking about, that there is a lot of teachers are embracing this because of their heart and their emotion and their want to help. They're not being critical in their analysis. They're not looking at what's going on here. They don't know about the historical record. And that's what's concerning me, in addition to all my other concerns, is a lot of teachers are being duped.
I think anyone who goes along with this agenda is being duped.
But it's
up to us to defend our children, because our children are the repositories of the culture. Look, about 2%, less than 2% of the people have gender identity disorder, which is manifests itself as homosexuality and other aberrations. Our children are 100% of our future. We've got to protect our children from being manipulated by the radical socialists and by the homosexual activists who want to sequester their minds and turn them away from truth.
Which is totally contrary to the code of ethics by the BC Teachers Federation.
Yes.
That prohibits, no exceptions, the misuse, abuse of the classroom for ideological purposes.
They cheerfully violate their own code of ethics. Yes.
Blatantly disregard.
But you know, just a word in defense of teachers. They pay a very heavy price for speaking out. Look at Chris Kempling.
Yes.
He was harassed for years.
Well, and let's pick up on that, Ted, because this is a perfect example for you parents to understand even more reason why you have to be the megaphone on this issue. And people have said, well, where are the teachers? Well, the teachers are prohibited from speaking out on this because when they do, they have the example, and I think it's actually in the background information of the Burnaby School District, of Chris Kempling, who wrote very truthfully and very factually about the problems associated, the medical consequences, the
very
emotional issues, all truth in a local paper, and then was hauled up by the BC College of Teachers for unprofessional conduct.
And had his license to teach suspended.
And in years of court, hundreds of thousands of dollars of expense. That's what happens to our good teachers. So the good teachers that are teaching right now need your voice. So not only do you need to be the voice for your children, the voice for you as the parent, the voice for you as the community, the voice of you as a democratic citizen that needs to take their duty in democracy very seriously. But we need to be the megaphone for those good teachers who daily see the hijacking of the public education system for a political agenda. This is what this issue is about. It is not about anti-bullying or homophobia or slurs. This is a political agenda to undermine your values, your beliefs, your ability to parent your child. This is about your parental authority being undermined. That's what this agenda is about. Know what it is.
Now, parents, listeners, now that we've made this appeal for you to become mobilized in this, I want to tell you that Roadkill Radio is going to try to equip you with what you need to become frontline warriors in the protection of your children. Carrie mentioned earlier the Declaration of Parents' Rights, which we are now in the process of updating to make sure that it conforms to all the current environment. It's a wonderful document, and we're going to make it available very soon through Roadkill Radio so that you, an individual parent, can get a copy of this document, fill it out, sign it, take it into your school principal, get them to sign a copy and put a copy on your child's file, and restore your authority in the direction of your child's education.
Mm-hmm. And I want to pick up on that as well, people. We are going to dedicate a large portion of our website to providing you with the documentation that's associated with this. We are also going to continue to provide it to the media, because a lot of the media has now been calling asking for background information. The Parents Voice has issued a media backgrounder, but this is well worth your read. It comes in pamphlet form or in a Word document. It's already on our website. If you look at the announcement today, there's a link to it. But I want to read to you the summary that's put out by the Parents Voice, because I think it's crucial for you to understand what's really going on here. Parents Voice says, "This political agenda thrives on gullibility and emotion to achieve goals. Fluid, ill-defined buzzwords, anti-homophobia, heterosexism, transphobia, sexual orientation, all relied on despite their illogic. These words are linked to the emotional issues of teen suicide, name-calling, etc., then typically bolstered by unreliable statistics, numbers that fail to support their objectives when a proper review is conducted. While these propagandist marketing techniques have found some favor with those who are easily duped, leveraged in some by good intentions, there is a growing backlash amongst those who no longer will tolerate the abuse of the public education system and our children. This backlash will no longer allow faulty statistics, special rights, and the political hijacking of our schools and courts to go unchallenged." And we haven't even got into the issues as they relate to the courts, but that's a whole nother set of problems that needs a whole nother set of show. This backgrounder, it gives a bit of history about the gay political agenda in BC. They're very clear that it's not an exhaustive account, but it's a good one. Up for your grabs.
Who has put that out?
The Parents' Voice.
Yeah. And it's on their website?
It's on their website, good. And it's on our website.
Right, and you've got a link to that.
On our website.
And we have one on our website, too, BC Parents and Teachers for Life, www.bcptl.org. There's a lot of information there, too.
Good information.
A lot of good information,
and
yes.
And background, the CORN agreement. Now, we should also mention, while we still have 3 minutes here, the CORN agreement is alive and well, controversial as ever. I believe that this current rise of parents will challenge that whole agreement, the legality of it, its purpose in our public education system. So everybody that is getting a copy of this show tonight, and I want to encourage you at this point, we will link this show to our website as we always do. You are free to promote this link. You can send it out to your email list. This is the most important factor in this revolution, this parental rights revolution. We need to distribute information. The most crucial role each one of you can play is to inform 10 other people about what's going on. Put into their hands the links that we've talked about here to the websites, the good information. Tell 10 people, and then tell each one of those 10 people to tell 10 people. That is your duty. That will ignite this issue across this country. An issue that isn't limited, as we touched on tonight, to just this one issue here in British Columbia. There is a whole attack on the natural family and family rights across this country. And Carrie Simpson and Ron Gray and Ted Hewlett and Roadkill Radio say enough is enough. Time to stop it. We need to make it roadkill on our highway of public controversy, people. Enough is enough. And together, civil-minded Canadians, common-sense Canadians, united for this purpose, will achieve this.
Good.
Well, that Thank went you. By fast. I can't believe 2 hours flew
that,
by.
That really flew by. That Thanks was, to everybody for listening. Thanks for making this your concern, just as it is ours. We're in this together. Let's link arms. Let's continue to stand together. Let's make our voices, let's make your voices heard. And we will stop this assault on our children. God willing, we will make something happen in Canada. And maybe it'll even go broader than that. Thank you for listening. This has been Roadkill Radio.
But before we go, I want to personally thank Ted Hewlett and all the people affiliated with your organization,
You're very
Ted.
Welcome.
Amen.
You have done yeoman's work for a lot of years, and without you constantly keeping this issue in a state of awareness, all these families, all the people in Burnaby wouldn't have the amount of information that they have at their disposal.
There's a lot of people in the battle now, so it's
Yes.
good.
Okay. You're in good company.
And their website is www.bcptl.org.
Which is, right. If you go to our homepage, it'll be linked there as well. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.